It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
No. I wish I had heard that before I just recorded the show.
I thought the same thing when I heard it. You very rarely hear a manager take a side on things.
That's telling. I mean, I've gotten to know him pretty well over the last 5 years. He's very close
deliberate.
To the
he
vest.
Knows,
oh, yeah. He knows,
plays the media.
He's really good at that. Really good at it. And that is telling. That's exciting to hear that from him. So I don't know if they'll land somebody, but that tells me something's in the works.
Sure. Why else would he? I mean,
he wouldn't come out and say that.
I agree with you on that, yeah. Greg.
Wow. Wow.
What do you think if they get an impact bat, do you feel
well,
like.
No, impact bat.
What?
What does impact bat mean?
Well, Brent Rooker would be an impact bat.
But he said add a bat. He didn't say add an impact
sure, but
bat.
This is now me saying if you added an impact bat, I think that this could be a playoff team. And the whole entire sports media has said if they just make the playoffs, they're not a team to mess with.
And I like the fact that the rest of the baseball media world is kind of putting a little pressure on the Pirates in that respect. That they're saying it. You know, we've heard it. You guys have talked about it. We know it. That this could be a playoff team and would be dangerous in the playoffs. So I like the fact that everyone else is saying it.
I don't like when a team circles a year when they think they're going to be good and it happens earlier than that and they still want to stick to their
game plan. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's happened over the years with the Pirates. I think it goes back to trying to predict a pitcher's health.
Yep.
You can't predict a year. We can't predict the National League Central Division being there for the taking. We don't know. Other teams are trying to get better. The Brewers, the Cardinals, the Cubs, we act like we're the only team trying to get better.
Sure.
They're all trying to get better. And they could be way better in the offseason. Maybe the Cubs decide to spend all kinds of money to upgrade next year. We have no idea. So I agree. You got to go for it. That's why I've got my sights, again, still set on not just the playoffs, but the National League Central Division.
Do you think that they would include Henry Davis in a trade for a big bat?
Personally, do I think they would? This is not... Anything from the organization,
right, this is
fan in me? Yes, I think they would. And but the only, you know, I listen to you guys whenever I can.
Thank you.
And then the station, of course, our flagship. I think you guys all do great. The one thing that at times I'll listen and I'll almost, my reflex is to want to call myself and to say, like, because I've heard people say, you know, trade Henry Davis, trade this guy, all the guys that, fans, and this is the fan in all of us,
sure.
Feel like that guy's not good. He's not going to help us. Trade him to get somebody good. What makes any of us think, no disrespect to Henry Davis, but that you'd get anything right now or much for Henry Davis? Yep. Oh, yeah, former number one pick. I don't know that. So I think we always have to be careful that we say, would you trade Henry Davis? Why? Because he's not doing well.
Well, my rebuttal to that is I feel like, especially with pedigree and where he was drafted, I think there's organizations that think we get him in our system and we'll turn him back into a good player.
Perhaps, but I don't think they're willing to give up a ton for that. We've seen that over the years when the Pirates have gone after former first-round picks.
Sure.
Look at Joey Bart.
I was just going to say that, Greg. That's actually a very good move by Charrington.
Yeah.
That was a very shrewd
pickup. Charrington so far has been, think about what he's done.
I think he's done very well with pitching. It's the hitting part that I think leaves a lot
to be desired. And again, that was a start, and that's not a nothing. Picking up Bart, you know, is certainly under the radar.
That was a good move.
But look at that move, and to hear Shelton, and I think Shelton is really close to Charrington. I think they work really well together. Again, that's why I'm excited to have heard that quote, because that's not just coming from Shelton. He's very close with Charrington. That must mean there's something in the works. Whether they can land whoever he's talking about is yet to be seen. And he talked about, let's find out what happens in the next couple of weeks. So every day now is important for the state. It's also important, I think, Andrew, not to get buried. You know, there's still a lot of work to be done. If the Pirates are working on a trade, that trade may be in the works, but it also could be on hold until, who knows, maybe the end of this weekend, maybe it's the end of this homestand, playing but the best team in baseball starting tonight. You can't go out and get swept.
Well, yeah, because a bad week and all of a sudden you go from a game and a half out, there's six teams ahead of you because
exactly.
They're so congested.
Exactly.
Where are you on Hayes for the second half of the season?
Oh, I'm high on the fact that he's hit the ball well the last couple weeks. I love what I've seen. He had seven hits in the three-game series against the White Sox. I think he's in a good place. I think 4 days off will serve him and O'Neill Cruz really well. I talked to Shelton about that on the pregame coming up.
Man, it's the
benefit
with
of 4 days.
And Reynolds, I did not want them to get tied.
I agree with that. Well, Reynolds really didn't.
Yeah.
So Reynolds was still in a better place in terms of 4 days off. But, maybe it'll. We also don't know. Shelton did admit this, that the last few games, Cruz was really fighting it. He was really hurting. But we don't know. Maybe Rowdy Tellez has been fighting through some things. Maybe he had the need for 4 days off. I like the place that they're in right now. But, again, you can't get buried. You can't. This is too big a homestand against the Phillies.
Do you think it's a fine line where, because we saw Huntington do this a lot, if they made a trade for, say, a Rooker, do you think they could still trade Chapman? Because Neil would do that all the time where it's like, I'm going to add here and I'm going to subtract here.
I think they could. I don't think that would mean that they were. I don't think you mean this.
I don't.
That's not mean they're trying to reset if they trade Chapman. They're still looking to help them this year.
Right.
And with Ryan Barucki coming back soon, that may give you the opportunity. But then again, maybe they the Pirates are in a situation where they need a strong bullpen. Another team, do they want Chapman to improve their bullpen? I don't know. Maybe the Pirates' bullpen is in a good place
right now. Well, he was not great in Kansas City last year, and then he went to Texas and helped them win a World Series.
Well, okay, so maybe the Pirates will think that way, too.
Yeah. Are you going to go up and see Leland on Sunday?
No. Those guys are Waukee, Wehner, they're doing it. Lanny,
do you have a close relationship with Jim?
Yeah, I'm not as close as those guys have played for. But I think I have I think maybe a lot of people would say this special relationship, not nearly as close as Lanny. But whenever I see Jim, it's great fun getting together, and he gets on me about some stuff, and he's just so good. He's just so good at what he does. He had that at sixth sense about what to say to when he was still managing. What he would tell me something. It was managing the Tigers. He'd come over, Brownie, come here. I got to tell you something. You can't use this. But you can't say this. I mean, he's just give you a little bit of a nugget. He knew that that's what you're looking for. He's really good at that.
I'm still hoping that Shelton gets better at the bullpen management end of things, as far as management.
You don't think he's good at that?
I don't.
Wow.
You do?
Yeah, I do. Actually, he's pretty good. Going back to your point about how good they've been with their pitching.
Well, okay, so you think their bullpen has been a strength of the team this
bullpen
year?
Bullpen usage?
Yes.
Yeah. I do.
I'm shocked to hear you say that.
Yeah. Now, there have been a couple of times.
I mean, he's left guys in there for way too long.
Now, there have been a couple of times where I agree with you. A couple of times I'd go, wow, I question that. And I think he would even admit that at times he's made some mistake. But, who's perfect? I guarantee you the greatest managers of the game make bullpen mistakes. But I think for the most part, since he's come on as manager of the Pirates, that's what a key for a successful manager for me.
Of course, pitching. Leland came on with us and said 90% of being a management is pitching.
Okay. So I think that for the most part, Shelton, he's not been perfect, no. But there are most nights I go like, that's a pretty good move right there. I would do that right now. And the other thing, too, about Shelton, maybe not on the air, but the next day I might ask him, as I would have Leland, what made you do this then? And he'd give you a pretty good explanation. Like, that makes sense. So
I also, and this is before their big winning streak, but I started getting very frustrated with the fundamentals breaking down. Guys forgetting how many outs there were.
Oh, that drives me crazy.
How does that happen?
I don't know. And I'm not making excuses. It happens all the time, not just for the Pirates. It happens every team. And it's just, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. It's the most frustrating thing in the world. It's been going on forever. But the better teams, Andrew, you know this, the Phillies can make up for base running mistakes because they're so stacked. they can make up for mistakes.
Well, they're a complete team. They've been a great pitching team the entire year. Their bullpen's been outstanding. They hit home runs.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just a complete
So they'll make mistakes, and nobody will talk about it this weekend. You watch. They'll make a couple of mistakes, but nobody will mention it because, look how good they are.
Well, but don't you think part of being a good coach or being a good manager is when your margin of error isn't you have to be more buttoned up, and you have to be better about the little things, the things
I would
that
say
come.
That, and I would bet
should come naturally to major league players.
Well, I would bet that Shelton and his staff would admit that we need to be better in that respect.
I'm shocked that he lets them bunt with two strikes. That whole thing drives me nuts. And we've seen that three or four times this year.
You know, Leland used to do that on occasion with position players. Bob Walk would tell me that.
Yeah, but guys could bunt much better back
then.
Well, that's
true. That's
30 years ago, Greg.
However, back then, 30 years ago, people didn't necessarily like getting the bunt sign unless you were Jay Bell. You were fine with it. But other guys it was like an affront that you're going to make me bunt. So Leland would see a guy kind of haphazardly, maybe not into it, try and bunt, and okay, we'll put it on now with two strikes and watch how intent they are in trying to get that bunt down. But you're right, the guys don't bunt well anymore, and it's surprising. Some of the guys that should be better bunters aren't, and that's surprising.
Last one, do you still do the pre-game cigar now that Blass is gone?
Michael McHenry has gotten really into it, as you know, and we got to have you on our Hold My Cutter podcast. We're going to do it. But Michael really got into it last. He asked me about it. He goes, how come you don't do that anymore? I said, well, Blass is retired. And he said, do you care if we do? I said, no. So we went and bought like a couple cigars. We go out there, and this is off the record. Nobody's listening. This is way before gates open, and you know, we find a spot that's not on the premises of the ballpark. So we find a spot, and unbeknownst to me, I light Michael's cigar. He starts coughing. He said, I've never smoked a cigar in my life. Well, he got into it. The next day, he had bought a dozen cigars, got a real nice humidor, a huge lighter, and he's into it more than ever. So he'll text me just about every day, hey, can we do it today? He's great at it, and we have fun. And Jason Mackey will join us on occasion.
Does he still have that mustache, or did he shave it?
I've not seen him recently, okay. So I don't know the answer to that.
Greg, thanks so much for coming down,
Andrew.
Man.
Thanks,
appreciate
man.
Appreciate having you here. Text us on the Edgar Slattern Associates fan text line. Mark Cabali is next on the Steelers opening camp. We're live at Mike's Beer Bar. It's the PM team.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
That music means it's time to talk to our top Steelers insider from The Athletic, frequent guest on the Pat McAfee program, and one of Pittsburgh's very best, the great Mark Cabali. Joined us. Mark, are you wearing a cutoff shirt right now?
I think so, absolutely. You know, I just got done watching the first five episodes of Cobra Kai, the final season, all pumped up. I'm going to pull out the old gi here in a little bit.
Give us a Cisco Liebert review. Thumbs up or thumbs down on this season?
It's tough right now because it's a five-part series on Netflix now for the last season. They're going five episodes now, five in November and five in, like, January. So they're just setting up things. It wasn't great the first five, but they're setting things up, so we'll have to wait.
Are the Steelers setting up a big Brandon Ayuk trade, Mark?
I don't think so, right? Huh. It doesn't look like the 49ers are quite everything you hear and talk to people about to cover the team. Doesn't feel that they are quite interested in moving him right now unless something crazy happens. He becomes a problem child here in the next month or so. It seems like they're about willing to just hold on to him. If they were going to make a move, it was probably going to be back in, you know, April or May. Now I think it's just a little bit too late for that, so I think he'll end up being the San Francisco 49ers for the year.
Okay, so if that happens, then who is your best guess as the guy that emerges as the Steelers' second-best wide receiver this season behind George Pickens, Mark?
Cool. It might be like a two-part answer here. I think Roman Wilson will eventually be that guy, but he might be a guy from, like, you know, November on. He might need some more seasoning here. Early on, wow, it's anybody's guess, right? There's not much to choose from where you're so very confident about it. I guess you can go Van Jefferson right now. Calvin Austin, I don't know if they can use him inside, outside. Honestly, I don't think they're going to have a true legit number two, to be honest with you. I think they're going to have about four of them that just they bring in and out, anywhere from, you know, Jefferson to potentially Watkins to Austin to Roman Wilson to even, you know, guys like Connor Hayward. I think it's just going to be a group effort until somebody emerges. And if nobody does emerge, and they're going to have to go with what they have. And I think Roman Wilson will eventually grab that spot, but I wouldn't anticipate that early.
One of our listeners wants to know what you make of the Steelers bringing back Tyler Medikevich, Mark.
You know, cheap special teams guy. I mean, they like those special teams only type of guys. They got about four of them now with Killebrew. Medikevich was the, he might have been a special teams captain when he was here. I'm not quite sure. I mean, they have guys like Mark Robinson who played that role very well. You got guys like Connor Hayward that played that role well last year. So they like to have those core guys to come in and be able to just play special teams.
Do you think it's another sign that this new kickoff rule is going to have a big impact on the NFL this year?
I don't think they know how the kickoff rule is going to be.
I know.
Right now. I think they're just anticipating a bunch of things can happen. I think the biggest thing we're going to see here is just the way kickers kick off now. I don't think there's any use in kicking high balls in the air, right? I mean, they're going to try to do a squib kick inside the 20 or something like that to see if that works more. So there's going to be a lot of trial and error. As soon as one team, one coach figures out what's the best way to go, and everybody's going to jump on that bandwagon. But right now, I don't think they know.
Mark, do you think that that's, I mean, do you think that they feel like they have a competitive advantage there now that they made the Patterson move?
Yeah, I mean, they jumped on him quick, right?
Right, that's what I mean. It was hours, exactly.
Honestly, I think they jumped on him a little bit before that because they were anticipating that going to be passed when it was. So that might have been talked to a couple of days earlier than it was announced, or at least a couple hours before it was announced. I don't know. The competitive, I mean, it's not bad to have a guy that has nine career kickoff touchdowns, but obviously as a kickoff returner. So I think, once again, to have him, if they put him in position to be able to, you know, get those hidden yardage, which just helps the offense, which then helps the defense. But I still think Cordell Patterson's going to have a bigger role than just kickoff returns, because you're not paying a guy $3 million to be a potential kickoff return of a new role that you're not quite aware of. They have to have other things in mind for him.
Mark, CBS Sports said today that Russell Wilson is a guy that they expect to exceed people's expectations as Steelers quarterback. A few days away from training camp starting, what are your expectations for Russell Wilson this year?
I think he's just going to be solid. I don't think he's going to make a lot of mistakes. I think he's going to stick to the plan, come up with a scheme that benefits the team the most, convert the third downs. I don't know who he's going to surprise. Maybe the national guys that think that he's done. I mean, he's not going to put up 30, 35 touchdowns, but that's not why they brought him in here. They brought him in to, I mean, he might be the game manager right now. He's going to manage this offense to be able to be put in position to more score more than 17 points per game, not turn the ball over. If he just plays solid, hits the throws that were there for him to hit, I think at the end of the, you know, when you look back at it, he will have a pretty successful season. I don't think that's too much of an ask for him either.
Mark, on July 19th, getting very close to Latrobe, do you view the Steelers as a playoff team, yes or no?
It's going to be close. I mean, I think they're a 9-10 win team, depending on, you know, that last half of the season who stays healthy, who gets hurt, you know, what happens to Joe Burrow. They're going to have to really try to compete for, I think, the division title to have a legitimate shot to make the playoffs. I don't know, maybe 10 wins doesn't get you in this year. So I think it'll be tough. But there is a team that you look across the board and you probably say they're better than last year, just personnel-wise, quarterback-wise, coaching-wise, and they won 10 games last year. If you put that into perspective, maybe a 10-11 win type of season this year gets them in. I'm not saying they're going to win 11 games, but they're going to be right around that 8-9-10 win spot, and depending on who they beat. If it's division guys, I think they'll get in.
Mark, one of the things I've been thinking a lot about with them offensively is, remember when Todd Haley came in, that 2012 season, they went 8-8 after making the playoffs. There was an adjustment period. There was a transition that needed to take place between the quarterback and the new offense. You're breaking in three young offensive linemen, Jones in his second year, the two rookies. It's a new play caller. I mean, should we expect that it's going to take some time with them offensively, or do you actually think they'll hit the ground running with so many new faces on offense this year?
I think the running game might be a work in progress early. Just like, I mean, they showed us that the last 2 years that it just takes some time for those guys to get. I mean, they're together all the time, but they never really practice live hitting and live game action until August 1st now. They're not putting helmets and pads on until next Monday. So I think that's where it is. But when you bring in a new coach, I think that's a little bit different than what it is now is, because Roethlisberger was pretty much set in his ways, right? He had to buy into it and break some of his habits of what Todd Haley wanted to do.
Remember, he was calling plays from the old playbook in games. He said, the hell with it. He said, I'm going to go back to the Bruce Arians plays.
What did he call that? He referred to Haley's playbook as something weird when he came in here. I thought you remember that. The old, I forget what it was. It was like really hard to learn. Here's the thing, though. I think Russell Wilson, I mean, what I've known from him, seen from him, heard about him, is that guy is the tireless worker. So if there's anybody going to get up to speed on a playbook, it's going to be a 14-year veteran who just works his rear end off. I don't think that would be the problem. There's a lot of new faces around that are just trying to fit in as well. So in that aspect, I think that might not take a long time to get working, but I think the offensive line might be that. I think, like you said, you got potential two new starters and a guy that's never played left tackle in the NFL before. So I think that's where you have to be a little bit concerned about right now.
Life on the line for Mark Cabali. Better chance the Pirates or Steelers make the playoffs this year?
And can they both not make it? Or the Penguins, right? I would say the Steelers. You know, with me and the Pirates, you go through 40 years of losing like this. I'm at the curmudgeon part of my life.
The curmudgeon comes out. The curmudgeon quotient becomes a real thing for Mark.
Yeah, I'm like, shut up and show me. Quit talking. I don't care if you're 500. You know, they got their next month and a half pony. I'm sure you looked at their schedule. Not too many cakewalks right there. So let's see here going into, September, where they're at.
Then all right, last one. Intern Dom said that he would win a fan personality beer pong contest. He is convinced that he would dust everybody in a beer pong tournament. Who would you pick? Would you go with Intern Dom?
Intern Dom? Is this the same guy that guaranteed he was going to win the hot dog eating contest and eat like a half of one?
He ate one. He came in last place.
I think Dom got a lot of little Cal Burger in him, right?
Wow. All bark, no bite.
Who would win beer pong? Huh. Are the producers or just anybody?
Everybody.
Wow. Joe Starkey. I would say Starkey because he's just so competitive, he'd somehow cheat.
All right. Fair enough, Mark. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk, of course, next week in Latrobe. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you,
there you go. Mark Cabali on the Fan Hotline presented by What am I looking at here? I'm not even looking at the right sheet. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service. My bad. All right, coming up next, it is the Donnie Football Debrief. Open phone Friday at 515, 412-928-9370. Here's a headline. That music means it is time for the Donnie Football Debrief, brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread. Donnie had the midday show because Joe Starkey had a very big golf match and Paul Zeiss was working an AAU basketball tournament, so we lost Donnie. But we gained an intern, Dom, a man who believes he would win the fan beer pong contest. He's been texted and tweeted by so many saying he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He is full of himself. And even though he is actively in college right now and apparently a trick shot beer pong expert, that he would embarrass himself in such a tournament if it were to occur. And I already have people texting me saying we would love to host the fan beer pong tournament, and we have sponsors galore that want to get involved in it. So how about that, Dom?
There we go.
Yes, you have people that want to spend money with the station and us because they want to see you put your beer pong skills on full display.
Listen, I'm ready to put them on display. The debrief for July 19, 2024. So, Pony, in the spirit of college, ESPN released yesterday their top 25 college football stadiums. Now, there's a point I want to make about this, and I want to talk about it with you. But first, just for fun, would you like to guess what the top five was?
Top five college football stadiums in America?
Yep.
Ohio Stadium?
No.
Michigan Stadium?
Michigan was number three.
Beaver Stadium?
Beaver Stadium was number five.
Bryant-Denny Stadium?
Incorrect.
No.
No.
How about Tiger Stadium, LSU?
Yes, number one.
How about Darrell Royal Stadium, Texas?
No. They were like 25, I think.
Camp Randall Stadium, Wisconsin?
No. You're missing one huge one, and then one that's that I think you should get.
How about Sanford Stadium, Georgia?
No. Pony, the fact that you're missing number two is shameful.
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame is four.
Kyle Field, Texas A&M.
No.
Clemson Memorial Stadium.
No, come on.
Nebraska.
No. There's a game that's played here every year named after the stadium.
There's a game that's played here every year that's named after the friggin' stadium?
Yes.
Okay, I did Ohio State. I did Michigan. I did Penn State. I did Wisconsin. That's the Big Ten.
This is incredible.
SEC, I did Georgia, I did Bama. Auburn?
No! Pac-12. Well, now I guess Big Ten.
Oh my God. Pac-12, oh wait. So, Oregon?
No, I gotta be honest, you might have to retire.
USC?
No!
What?
The Rose Bowl!
Oh. I don't even really count the Rose Bowl. I think that's a bad job. I think that's a bad job by the people that ranked it. I swear to God, if we opened up phone calls right now and said, "Have you been to the Rose Bowl? Give us your reviews." 412-928-9370. People would say that the pageantry is very good, but then they would say the stadium itself is the most overrated stadium in all of sports.
Okay. Yes.
Place is an absolute dump.
But it's legendary. Like, the Rose Bowl was legendary, and you didn't get
it. Okay, where the A's and Raiders play, the Oakland Coliseum is legendary for a bunch of reasons. It's also a dump.
It's not legendary like the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl is known for sitting on the edge of the mountains with beautiful sunsets.
You know what?
But
here's the other thing I don't like about it. I know that UCLA plays games there, but I don't like a stadium that's really synonymous just one game. It's not like, does the Rose Bowl feel like a big college stadium when UCLA is playing Stanford? No.
Somewhat.
There's like 10,000 people there, Dom.
Okay, that's true. They don't get, their attendance is bad during the regular season.
It's big. It's the crown jewel of college football once a year. These other places that were behind them in the rankings, six or seven dates on a college football schedule, it's a happening place to be. I don't know. I don't like it.
I'm not even saying I disagree with you. I think it's you. I'm okay with it at number two.
I hate Notre Dame. I'm not a fan. I hope they lose every game and go 0-12 every season. I would much rather go to Notre Dame Stadium for a game than the Rose Bowl. 100%.
I probably agree with you. But the Rose Bowl is a staple of sports. All right, so the point kind of going off of this, you know what school wasn't in the top 25, Pony?
Pitt.
Pitt. And you know why that is?
Because they don't have an on-campus stadium?
Damn right. And it is a damn shame that they don't have an on-campus stadium.
Well, now you are finally, after so many outrageous claims by you, I do think you are preaching to a choir, maybe for the first time in your career as a personality at our radio station.
Well, I just think that it stinks that the college team of Pittsburgh, well, Penn State is Pittsburgh's college team. Pitt is right behind them, though. And they do not have a legitimate college stadium with a legitimate college atmosphere. And all these students that are paying thousands of dollars can't walk out of their dorm and go see Pitt be mediocre. Like, that stinks to me.
And they have to get on a bus. And sometimes the bus will leave before the game is over, I think.
Right.
I hope I'm not making that up, because if I am, Pitt will be very angry. But I do think the buses leave sometimes before the game is even done.
And I get that it's only a 10-minute drive, but they're in two completely different parts of Pittsburgh. And it's not, it should be in Oakland. It's not on a college campus.
I know, man. I agree with you on that.
So I think it stinks.
All right, Dom. Great stuff, as per usual. I see that you're feuding with Callis, who is texting you about the beer pong contest. And Donnie pointed out that Callis has 228 unread texts.
Whoa. Are you serious?
Yeah. Look at what was posted by Callis about his exchange with you. And then the blue number right next to your name, by the way, he doesn't have you saved in his phone. It just says maybe Dominic DiTommaso.
Wow.
And then 228 unread texts.
That is unbelievable.
I don't read all my emails, and Malzi always rips me for it, but I think texts, to have over 200 unread texts is bizarre behavior.
I got to be
honest. For a producer, for someone that needs to, like, coordinate interviews and contact his hosts and whatnot.
Correct.
Terrible job by him.
I'll tell you what, I'm borderline offended that he doesn't have me saved in his phone.
You should be.
To be honest.
All right, coming up next, we will look at the Pirates and Phillies tonight here live from Mike's Beer Bar right next door to PNC Park. It is Open Phone Friday at 5:15. And then at 5:30, we will have Dan Zangrilli previewing this series and talking about the Pirates in the second half of the season. There is a Pirates trade rumor that I want to get into, and also a thought on this series. All on the way. Live from Mike's, it's the PM Team on the Fan.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.